Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome to the December 2021 monthly webinar. My name is Mike Kramer, and I'm presenting to you today on behalf of Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditations. I am the Calibration Inspection Program Manager at PJLIA, and welcome to this December and final monthly webinar of 2021. And as you can see, we're going to wrap up the year with an overview of Section 5, which are structural requirements of ISO IEC 17025-2017. As always, this webinar is being recorded. All of our webinars that we do at PJLA are available for download on our website. This includes both the recording, and also if you just like to download the slides, you can also do that straight through our web, PJLA, and provided you the link there. Currently, you can hear me, but I can't hear you. Everybody is muted. There is a question tab. So as we're going through the presentation, if you have any questions, and please keep them in regards to today's topic, you can type them right there into the question tab. And at the conclusion, I will pull that up and I will review them and answer them at the conclusion of the webinar. So structural requirements as Section 5. So what are we encompassing in this section? Basically, what we're looking at is areas such as the basic organizational concepts of the lab. We're going to look at the range of activities, how the laboratory has to define those range of activities in which it's complying with in regards to the standard, i.e. C17025-2017. Going to assure commitment of to an effective management system. Assure that all accredited laboratories must be a legal entity or part of a legal entity. This section sets management responsibilities in an accredited lab and their responsibilities to customers, regulatory authorities, and organizations that provide recognition. And it also defines the basic requirements for personnel, the authority given to them, and the resources needed to carry out their duties. So we're going to look at the various clauses in this section. First one is pretty straightforward. Structural requirement, clause 5.1. The laboratory shall be a legal entity or a defined part of a legal entity that is legally responsible for the laboratory activities. So in other words, if you're a testing or calibration lab, perhaps you're located within a manufacturer. The standard also makes a note here that it considers government laboratories to be deemed as a legal entity. So pretty straightforward there. So when we refer to a legal entity, could be defined as an association, corporation, partnership, proprietorship, trust, or individual that has legal standings in the eyes of the law. A legal entity has legal capacity to enter into agreements or contracts, assume obligations, incur and pay debts, sue and be sued in its own right, and to be held responsible for its actions. Second clause, section 5.2, The laboratory shall identify management that has overall responsibility for the laboratories. So going, stepping back in time with the 2005, the standard before it was revised, it was very specific in a standard that you, with it, you had to define a quality manager or technical manager. That's no longer required. However, if you look at the standard, we're going to look at some various sections. It's going to look at some various responsibilities today in this sections. The functions are still there. However, those terms of having to have an individual specified as quality or technical manager is no longer there in the standard. However, we have to identify management that has overall responsibility for the laboratory. So it says management. It doesn't say individual. I could be a perhaps it's a partnership where it would be more than one person. So whatever the situation is, management must be identified for having responsibilities for the laboratories. Perhaps it's a laboratory, as we mentioned earlier, that perhaps is it in a manufacturer. That would be the individual that's over the laboratory, overseeing the day-to-day operations of the laboratory. Clause 5.3, the laboratory shall define and document the ranges of laboratory activities for which it conforms with this document. When we say this document, we're referring to 17025. The laboratory shall only claim conformity with this document for the ranges of laboratory activity, which excludes externally provided laboratory services on an ongoing basis. What I have there is a sample snapshot of a scope of accreditations. So if you look at this clause and you look at what we have depicted here on the screen, this is pretty much fulfilling the bill for an organization that's 17025 as far as defining the range of laboratory activities for which it conforms with this document, or in this case is accredited to. 17025. So once again, the scope of accreditation issued or developed could be sufficient documentation. The CAB, which is the organization that is accredited, should define additional ranges for any scope expansion prior to claiming conformity and proceeding with the reaccreditation assessment. So if you're an organization and you are not yet accredited, and say you're in the application stages of applying for accreditation, one of the first things we want to see is, what are you proposing as your scope of accreditation? That is basically your testing or your calibration, the ranges, the CMCs, procedural, things like that. So prior to going out and doing an assessment, we're going to select an assessor that's technically competent in those areas and can assess your laboratory. So once you are accredited, then i.e. you'll have that scope of accreditation as a standalone document. And as stated here, if you're expanding your scope, and I've been seeing a lot of scope expansions lately, you should assure that you comply with your proposed expansion items in the same manner that those items that are already on your scope of accreditation. And same holds true for a scope expansion. Prior to expanding a scope, we'd like to see you document how those ranges and capabilities are being proposed to be put onto the scope of accreditation. It may also be important to communicate different levels of services for items identified on the scope. There could be evidence that provides confidence. There should be evidence that provides confidence that the customer is clearly aware of the options. So I know even when I was part of a lab, particularly with calibration services, sometimes it was confusing. You have different levels of services you could obtain. Top level service, and this is just an example, ISO IEC 17025 accredited calibration, or I could get a NIST traceable calibration or something really as simple as a certificate of accuracy. And oftentimes the price tag may go up as I'm making those selections. However, it should be clearly communicated to the client as to the different levels here. Even though you are accredited, say, to do a particular test or calibration, that you offer other types of reporting that you may consider as a non-accredited type of test or calibration. So one thing you may have noticed on the clause, it states which excludes externally provided laboratory activities on an ongoing basis. And what we're referring to there is covered under section 6.6, externally provided products and services. So of course you could subcontract items under your scope, and there's requirements in 6.6, but if it's something that's going to be on an ongoing basis and as a rule rather than an exception, then this would not apply. All right, clause 5.4. The laboratory activity shall be carried out in such a way as to meet the requirements of this document 17025. The laboratory customers, any regulatory authorities, and organizations providing recognition, such as PJLA, for example. This shall include laboratory activities performed in all permanent facilities and sites away from its permanent facilities, in associated temporary or mobile facilities, or a customer's facilities. So, what we're stating here, what the standard is stating, and what we see often is, and I'm do a majority of calibration assessments when I'm doing assessments, is often I'll see, and if you look at the bottom right hand corner is an example of an organization that we accredited, just a snapshot there, and this is a calibration organization, and they calibrate stopwatches. And what that FO subscript means is they're accredited to do these stopwatches. They have a fixed facility where you can send your stopwatches in, ship them, deliver them to them, and they can do it right there at their fixed facility, providing accredited calibration. Or the O means offsite. So in other words, the facility is also accredited to transport their standards, their technicians to your facility, and then do the calibrations directly on site at the customer's location. So as an accrediting body, these are some things that we look at separately, calibration being done, or a test being done at the fixed facility, and also being done at the off-site location, assuring that the requirements of the standard are being met. Of course, when you're doing a calibration or test at the customer site, the environment may not be as friendly as in the fixed facility. There's the issues as far as transporting, security transporting equipment, perhaps having to set up and having equipment equilibrate. The environment may be outside of stated parameters in which the calibration or test could be undertaken, and the standard does address that and what needs to be done in those cases. So basically under this section, everything that if you are accredited and if the accreditation does cover both on-site and calibrations at the fixed facility, the requirements are looked at in the same light. Okay, clause 5.5. Then we got A, B, and C here. The laboratory shall define the organization and management structure of the laboratory, its place in any parent organization, and the relationship between management, technical, and support services. So often, and I depict here a sample of how I often see this, how objective evidence is presented, and most of the time I would say it's done in form of some sort of an organizational chart. It's not required that it be done in an organizational chart. It's up to the organization to define what's specified here under 55A, and an organizational chart seems to be the go-to source. And I've seen some very large, complex organizational chart, and I've also seen organizational charts in which the organization was just two people. And hence, that would be a very simple organization, but they still have to comply with 55A. And they can either do it for a small organization as a simple organizational chart, or perhaps just the additional dissertation and the documentation within the quality management system. 55B, specify, the laboratory shall specify the responsibilities, authorities, interrelationship of all personnel who manage, performs, or verify work affecting the results of the laboratory activities. I sort of highlighted affecting the results of laboratory activities. So that could be done, and I've actually seen on small organizations, it's actually captured within the organizational chart. I think we have some overlap here as some other things that are going to be captured in the standard under the section on personnel, 6.1. With communicating duties, responsibilities, authorities, which is looked at in this section here, but it's also here captured under structural requirement. For persons affecting laboratory activities, the results of laboratory activities. So of course, these are the folks that are perhaps directly managing the lab, the technicians that are doing the test or calibrations. But you also think about perhaps you have other individuals that are perhaps involved in doing internal auditing or perhaps in purchasing, involved in purchasing critical supplies. They would also be under this realm of 55B, which is specifying the responsibilities, authorities, and a relationship of all personnel who manages, performs, or verify work affecting the results of laboratory activities. 55C, the laboratory shall document its procedures to the extent necessary to ensure consistent application of its laboratory activities and validity of the results. So again, need to assure that everyone have access and that the laboratory testing and calibrations are being performed uniformly throughout the organization. So again, that could be very simple. If you're a small organization, perhaps you all the work is done within the confines of your four walls, what I sort of depicted over there on the left-hand side. Where you're still working with perhaps binders and basically hard copy documentation with a quality manual as being a top tier document, may very well fit the bill to the extent necessary. However, if you're a larger organization, perhaps you have multiple locations across the country, and perhaps this may need to be done more electronically, as opposed to the smaller organizations. Whatever the case may be, I just need to assure that things are being implemented with uniformity throughout your organization, regardless of size and structure. 5.6. The laboratory shall have personnel who, irrespective of other responsibilities, they will have the authorities and resources needed to carry out their duties, including implementation, maintenance, and improvement of the management system. So your quality management system, I really like to refer to them as living documents. These aren't items that, you have an assessment, you make it through the assessment, then you put them up on the shelf and they collect dust, and then you blow the dust off prior to the next assessment. That's what I refer to as living document. They can be changed, they can be improved. I have to assure that the implementation that's being stated in the quality management system is in fact being practiced. Duties including the identification of deviations from the management system or from procedures for performing laboratory activity. Also, initiation of actions to prevent or minimize such deviations. Also, including reporting to the laboratory management on the performance of the management system and any need for improvement. And then a D there and E, actually, these are also items that are incorporated into the management review if they're not anywhere else within your organization done on a predetermined schedule. And 5-6-E, ensuring the effectiveness of the laboratory activities. We got 5-6, A, B, C, D, E. If you take a second, if you look at them, even though the standard does not state a quality manager, if you look at these duties and responsibilities that are listed here, they appear to be duties that, and responsibilities that would typically be associated with an individual who is fulfilling the role of, i.e., a quality manager. Okay, clause 5-7. A, communication takes place regarding the effectiveness of the management system and the importance of meeting customers and other requirements. So again, this is also captured, if nothing else, at least during the management review. This is one of the outputs that are captured in the management review. However, again, depending on the size of your organization, it can vary as to how this is accomplished. I often come across smaller organizations that they basically have an informal get together, perhaps once a week or once a month. I do recommend that they are having these, say, staff meeting, that a record be created just to show that these are in fact taking place to solidify compliance with 5-7-A. Five, seven, B, the laboratory management shall ensure that the integrity of the management system is maintained when changes to the management system are planned and implemented. Again, this is going to vary depending upon the complexity of the structure of your organization. So this is basically stating, hey, if I change in this area in our quality management system, just to assure that it's not having any adverse effect on any of the other areas, that this needs to be ensured typically with document control. A lot of times it's incorporated in there when you change a document which is in part of your quality management system. There's typically a review and approval process, but you need to make sure that when these changes to the management system are made, that they are a plan and implement it, and then it's, if you're changing an area, then it's not having an adverse effect in another area. So that is going to conclude section 5-7. Went through everything there. It's a relatively short section. I think some of it's kind of repetitious, because I think some of it overlaps areas that could be incorporated in personnel, section 6-1. So I mentioned earlier, let me just pull up my questions here and bear with me 1 minute. Have one person here asking me. I just have one question right now. Can you please share what are the mandatory procedures? And that sort of caught me off guard there. But let me give you an example of one. First of all, when you look in the standard, and there's less of these in the 2017 standard as opposed to the 2017 standard, and just scrolling down here, I got an electronic copy open on my other computer. And when you see the word shall, that's a requirement. So when the standard says shall, and it's in reference to a procedure, that means that that is a procedure that you shall maintain. And I'm just looking through the standard here. I just happen to be looking at 662 in the standard. That's externally provided products and services. The laboratory shall have a procedure and retain records. So it has to have a procedure here in section 662, externally provided products and services. And there's an ABCD listing there. And you have to have records here too. So it's another area is records. Procedure is telling you how to do something, and a record is showing you what's been done. Under 711, this is review requests, tenders, and contracts. So like I said, that I would recommend you go through the standard and look at the word shall there for procedures as far as what's required in the standard. 771 reads, the laboratory shall have procedures for review requests, tenders, and contracts. That's a requirement. That's a shall. Hence, as per 17025, as an assessor, when I get to this section, I'm going to look for a procedure that you have something in place telling me how you folks handle the review request tenders and contracts protocol in your organization. So as far as mandatory and 17025, basically those shalls there. I just gave you an example of two of them. There are several others. Okay, any other questions? I just have one there. So as we wrap up this year, while I'm waiting here, we will just take a gander into the future here. And I got another question here, and this is a hypothetical situation. If you have an organizational chart in section 55A, but the role is not filled at the time of the audit, will this constitute a violation? I would just specify if there is a role that's critical to the validity of your laboratory results, such as perhaps a laboratory manager or a key technician. If you have somebody that can act in that behalf prior to the to fill the void until that is fulfilled, until that void is filled. Speaking for myself, I would not handle that as a non-conformance. If there is a perhaps someone in place at the present time that's fulfilling that void. Okay, give another second here. Okay, so we conclude 2021, and we'll get together again on Monday, January 24th. We're going to have an interesting webinar for us to go through. And what this is going to entail is the top list of findings written by PJLA during our 2021 assessments. So so we're going to we have records, we compile all these clauses, and we do tabulate number of non-conformances. So we're going to have a top 10 list where we're going to go look at these clauses, going to dissect them a little bit, perhaps present some objective evidence that could be presented to show compliance to these clauses that makes the top 10 list. So I look forward to everyone signing in 2022 for our first one. And before we depart, just want to wish everybody a happy new year, and look forward to continuing to do these webinars in 2022. Thank you once again.